My name's Paul Tolley, and generally I interview the mayor after the local council meeting each month. We're a little late with this one. Good morning, Sam. Nice to have you in the studio.
Well, good morning, Paul. It's great to be in a different studio.
It's interesting, isn't it? We might put a photo up. Been a while since we sat in a studio together,
yeah,
isn't it?
We're just reminiscing last year.
So we had a
council meeting early December. And that would have been our last chat, and here we are on the 8th of March.
Here we are on the 8th of March.
It seems too long. Although we have had a chat down at the opening of the Belgrave Cinema.
The 30th anniversary.
There we go. And you asked me my favourite movie, and it's Spy Game.
So yes. We got
that. And I encourage everyone to go out and have a look at that.
So we're going to start with a good news story. You had the privilege earlier this year to be involved in two important events, the awarding of the Australia Day category winners and the citizenship ceremony. 90 new citizens received their citizenship certificates. You must have enjoyed that, I suspect, especially because those events bring a lot of pleasure to a lot of people.
Oh, they do. I do say it at the beginning of every citizenship ceremony. It's the unexpected privilege of this role that I have. And you can see it in people just how excited they are, genuinely excited to become Australian citizens, even if they've lived here for a long time. And it doesn't take too long to reflect how lucky we are, those of us who were born here. It really is a great thing. I do love a citizenship ceremony.
And it shows, and I have to say, I'm one of those people who went through a ceremony because I grew up in New Zealand.
So there we go.
I did that on the Gold Coast many years ago. And Sandy Sweeney, a long-time volunteer broadcaster with 2ARM, this station, was named Citizen of the Year.
Isn't that great?
Yep. 37 years plus doing a show.
I hadn't met Sandy, but coming into your studio, I'd seen her picture on that wall of fame that you have. I know Mike's on that. I don't know. Is there a picture of you on that wall? I'll have to look closer.
We're all there. Although when you do get into the station, you'll find out that we've been painting, so a lot of things came down off the wall. So into the meatier stuff. A final bid for $21 million to finance the New England Rail Trail has been rejected.
Yes.
And you said in a press release you were disappointed by that decision.
Oh, hugely disappointed.
Implications for Armidale?
The implications for Armidale is that it means that we have to, continue through that process. Again, I think the disappointment is beforehand. We would have spoken about this last time when the state government, Tara Moriarty, Minister for ironically named Minister for Regional New South Wales, went through this spate of withdrawing money from Regional New South Wales. So Glen Innes lost there just a sniff under $9 million. We know that Dubbo lost $30 million. There was a lot of money withdrawn, and at the same time, federally, the money that we had for the rail trail was withdrawn. We'd applied for that $21 million for the Precincts and Partnerships program, and that's an ongoing one. And we were notified, I can't recall when, sometime in February, I imagine, that we weren't successful in that round. So we have been told that if the project changes at all, we can reapply, don't put the same application in. So, that's where we are. This is an ongoing program, but it'll depend a little bit on the federal election. So that Precincts and Partnerships program replaced another program that the previous coalition had, and they took all the money, thought about for about 18 months what they'd do, reshuffled, and then launched Precincts and Partnerships. In terms of the large scale stuff, in the most recent round that they awarded, there were about six projects, some in Broome, just really scattered around Australia. So
we know how that works.
We know how that works. Anyway, one doesn't have to read too hard between the lines, but it would be really interesting what happens in this federal election and, what money in what form is put into, funding regional projects. So if Labor stay in, I think that Precincts and Partnerships program will continue.
So my question then is, if you can put another application in, if there has been a change to the project, what might that change look like? Putting you on the spot with that one.
Yeah, you are putting me on the spot. I suspect
Well, may I suggest that the two rail trails in this area link? Mm.
Well, that would be one of it. But our 21 million application was to get us to the edge of the Armidale mm-hmm. LGA boundary with Glen Innes. So it was to take us right through from Armidale through to Ben Lomond.
Yep.
So, yep, look, that could be one of them.
You're not revealing that at this stage. No. All right. What's been going on at the airport? I have a lot of questions about this.
I put out my newsletter this week, and, you know, it's one of those things that was set to test us. It was totally unexpected, so...
Can I stop you there?
Yeah.
Why were these problems not picked up in the standard scheduled maintenance?
Because they hadn't appeared until we were at the end of the maintenance. So what had happened is that it was a resealing program of the runway, and that had been going on for over a month, so mostly, you know, between flights and weekends. And it was the final day of that resealing, and so a runway needs to be very smooth, so you need very heavy rollers to press everything down.
And they put a crew out in a ute twice a day, by the way. I've seen it happen to check for debris.
Yes, but it really is the resealing program. So it was the final day of the resealing, and the heavy rollers were on it, and they disturbed an underground water table, and that vibration and the heavy pressure disturbed that, and that water started leaching to the top, and that cracked the pavement along the edge. So that was it wasn't picked up in the early testing, so it was right at the end. So then the pavements failed, and our initial thing was to dig it all out, and that's when pretty much every bit of earth moving equipment in the region flocked to the airport. And people really work from sunrise to sunset and probably a bit later. So we had to dig out a section. It was 100 metres long, or 70 metres plus another one of 30 metres, 100 metres long, 5 metres wide, and I think about 600 mils deep. It was cut out and drainage put in to fix it. So that took a week or so for all of that to happen. Then there was a bit more testing, and another soft patch appeared. And we really need to provide the airlines with certainty. So the whole open-closed wasn't any good. So they needed a scientific, and we needed that as well.
You need engineers basically involved. And I guess my question about why wasn't it picked up in scheduled maintenance, I guess it depends on the depth of that maintenance. If you've got engineers, perhaps...
The engineers would have been involved. So, well, the engineers were involved, but... You would have needed to core sample through the airport, through the runway.
Should we do this every 10 years or every 5 years?
I
should
have no idea. I'm not an airport expert.
No, but I'm just wondering if that should be part of a scheduled maintenance process. I mean, I take my car in and they do small, medium and large as a rotation. I guess that was my question. Maybe in the future.
Maybe in the future. So where we got to was to get some people out of Brisbane. And they were able to... It's an FWD, reflected weighted distributor or something. Anyway, it was a machine that they were able to go up and down the runway very slowly, effectively ground-penetrating radar. And it can reenact the pressure that landing a fully laden Dash 8 will have. And they were able to therefore test the structural integrity of the runway. And so it was... After we'd done all of our maintenance and fixed patches, etc., that they did that, that we got the clearance, that all was okay. So, there we are.
It's interesting to me because I think it brings up a few other issues. The first one being the closure of the airport, in my mind, highlights some broader transport challenges for this region. There's no rail transport north of Armidale. There's a dearth of public transport in general. The coaches north didn't come back after COVID. Really, we have two public transport events in Armidale. One is the planes at the airport. Yeah. The other is the train going south. And there's a small business at Dorigo Transport that will take people to the coast on occasion. In a way, this airport event, in my mind, has really demonstrated a vulnerability to the New England region. Doesn't that point to the need for a rail service north?
Probably not. I realise there's a lot of people trying to link the two.
No, well, I'm just thinking that there is not there, without that occasional plane that does fly to Brisbane, there's nothing. Sydney, you have ways of getting south, but
yes.
I'm just wondering about opening the region up, I guess. The economic and other requirements, and I'm not quite sure what do we need. How do we get north?
Paul, let's try and unpack this in a fairly sensible way. If the trains ever ran to Brisbane, that would be brilliant. So let's put that down. We can have this great big wish list, but so let's.
And
do
you
it.
And I have had that conversation, and we agree on that, and we agree that governments are both saying that not in the immediate future, which is political speech, not even for never. They don't want to say never, but you never say never. Never.
Yeah.
And it does require two governments to get involved. I'm aware of that, but I'm really trying not to mount an argument for trains. I'm really trying to point to the vulnerability of transport where Armidale sits.
We have, I think that would be ideal. I think you're really devoid. You've had a departure from reality if you think that's going to happen. It's a wonderful dream, but it just will not happen. So what we need in terms of public transport, ideally, is for the buses to return, because that is feasible and that's immediate.
And I absolutely agree, by the way.
So that's feasible and immediate. There are no buses going south with the train. Mm-hmm. But there will be if the train line buckles, which it does, and so you can get a train as far as you can and then buses from there. Look, the advent of the motor car and trucks and all of those things is really what's killed the prospect of trains ever coming back. So there we are there. The other thing... Yeah, the airport closure showed a vulnerability. What really intrigued me, and I flew out of Tamworth twice, and I'm reasonably well known by sight, and so a lot of people that were flying came up to me, and not one person saw this as a crisis. They saw it as an inconvenience. And all of the pearl clutching and the, oh my God, who's going to think of the children, really came from the non-travelling public. So... Yeah, the reality is I flew in and out, as I said, twice from Tamworth. Others were going, and the common refrain was, this is a little bit of an inconvenience. It's added an hour and 45 to our trip. And that's it. But look, we are a bit stranded. And from a public transport point of view, I do feel... I feel for those that don't have the option for private transport. That's, again, a reality. But, I think the best thing a government could do, if they were serious about the regions, is put buses on. Now, there is a review that Jenny Aitchison, the Minister for Regional Transport, is doing. That's been kicked out and extended. It'll be really interesting to see what actually comes of that, because that state government's probably got, another 2 years to run in this term. They'll get re-elected handsomely. There's 6 years for the state government to actually do the doing. Personally, I think Jenny Aitchison is a brilliant minister. She is really, really good at her job. She is really, and I'm not party political at all. I judge people on their merit. I'm an issues guy.
And outcomes.
Yeah, I'm an outcome sort of a person. Mm. And she is one of those ministers who is genuinely that way. She's genuinely plugged into the community. And she is the best chance we have for the best form of transport we're ever going to get.
So let me ask you a question. I don't know. You may be privy to figures that I don't have access to. I don't know whether a bus link Armidale to Brisbane is economically viable. If it wasn't, do you think the government would subsidise?
Well, the answer is they haven't.
In the past. That's true.
So I had reason to catch... I needed to get to Warwick. So the private bus service that operated... used to take us up there was Crisp Coaches, which were based out of Warwick.
And then you transferred to another... Yeah. And you went up to Toowoomba or Brisbane.
So it was, there was a public transport option. It was clear. It's clearly uneconomic. Otherwise, they would have been back here in a rush. So it's uneconomic. I don't know to what extent they were being subsidised by the government, but everything is subsidised.
Just asking the question.
Yeah, I think they should. I know we have this fixation with this need to get north. I don't know how much of that is real and how much is manufactured.
Well, interestingly, I don't mind driving to Brisbane if
it's
I'm
easy,
if
it?
I'm going to. Well, if I.
Yeah.
In comparison with, if I go to Sydney, I generally catch the train because I can't. It's cheaper to catch the train than it is to drive, and I don't have to struggle with finding parking. So I actually am comfortable with my going south arrangements, but I have a son in Brisbane. My going north arrangements are not so easy.
But maybe just to land the plane on your question, I don't think the airport closure highlighted something we didn't know. The airport closure
I think
was,
you knew and people knew. I think the general public probably had never considered it.
No, and it... Okay, fair call. But it was... The closure of the airport was an inconvenience and a massive financial burden that's landed on us. Let's be really clear about that.
Yes.
But in terms...
Well, you just answered another question.
Oh, well, we can delve deeper.
Capital budget 2000.
Shot to pieces. But yeah, we are in a bit of a we do need more services. But this is what I've been banging on about for 3 years. We're just not going to get these services until we're bigger. It's as simple as that. And the
factor of growth, yes,
it's a factor of growth, and we're just not in desperate enough need relativity, but based on population. But as I said, I think Jenny Aitchison, her review of public transport, and guys out there that are listening, I'm sorry to break this to you, it will not include a train going north.
No, we know that.
The
biggest problem for you, however, going forward in this respect, is you've got the New England Northwest Strategic Regional Integrated Transport Plan coming up, commencing quarter three of 2026. It's going to address regional transport issues. This is governmental, not your level. Fairly comprehensively, and it's likely to have, I suspect, a fair number of perhaps strongly worded submissions from local rail campaigners landing on your desk when it occurs. There you are.
More power to them. I genuinely hope they're right.
they have something, they get to something.
Anyway.
Regional cities, New South Wales.
When I come back, you need to ask me a question about the airport.
No,
about the price you were going to talk
no,
about.
No, I found the figures.
Oh, okay.
I found the figures. People can find and chase them up if they want. But I was just going to point out that your capital budget, yes, has been shot to pieces by the airport events. The regional cities, New South Wales, have identified a traffic bottleneck in Armidale, one of 10 priority projects requiring attention. Armidale's amongst, and this is their words, 93 choke points across the state's freight network identified by Regional Cities New South Wales. We all see how many track speed doubles and road trains are on the road. The problem, and we've discussed whether or not and to what extent rail can and cannot be a solution, but I suspect part of the problem historically, and there's nothing we can change now, it's in the past, was the fact that the proponents of closing the rail and moving freight onto the roads never ever made the point that this was in fact cost shifting. Governments described this as saving money because we don't need to maintain the rail anymore. Nobody ever said, yes, but you've got to do a lot more highway maintenance, and there are lives and there are accidents. And there was a major cost shift, which was never put to the public because it was only ever described as being saving money for rails. And I guess that's just a comment from me, but I think going back historically to where all this started, really.
I think the death of the rail, certainly going north of Armidale, is likened to the death of the stagecoach industry. There's a chap that has a fairly substantial business out at Acacia Park. And he's a manufacturer. He manufactures big, heavy stuff. He has provided a report to a number of people about the likelihood of him and others, manufacturers in this region, using rail. He tried it once, and he said it was a disaster.
Mm.
the timing just ruined it for him. So it, you know, the thing is, rail only goes from A to B, and that's really why
it doesn't get used. It's based on freight hubs.
Yeah, it's a lot more movements to get there, and it's expedience. Now, in terms of the cost shift, taking things off rail and onto road, it's mainly the state roads that they're going on anyway. So it's from one arm of the state coffers to the other. Now, sure, trucks travel on regional roads and local roads as well, but they would have to get freight to said hub. So I don't know if that cost, it might be real, might not. I think really what killed the rail freight is that we just didn't have anything to put on it, and people didn't want to put things on the train in this region, because we don't have bulk goods, we don't have bulk grain, we don't have coal or anything that is
wheat.
We just don't have those things that are going from, you know, a few multi points to a single port.
And I just thought I'd, you know, for my own interest, because there's been a lot of toing and froing about the trains north versus the rail trail and everything, I thought it just might be a little interesting for our listeners to unpack some of the background and the meta view, if you like, the overview, the context of all of this, rather than just continually honing on, do you support the rail trail or, and it's become an either or argument. I just thought it might
be
useful
it's either nothing or something, and the possible worlds of something are very, very narrow.
We spoke last year about the economic value to the city of promoting itself as a halfway point between Sydney and Brisbane for electric vehicle charging, bringing people into town, have lunch while you're in Armidale, see a bit of Armidale while your vehicle's charging. We're going to have a council electric vehicle charging stations on public lands policy, I believe.
Well, we will, so it's on public exhibition.
Mm-hmm.
We've been approached by a number of providers to put this infrastructure in, and we just want to provide certainty and consistency in what they can expect from us to do it. So,
and we know one of the major dismotivations, which isn't really a word for people having electric vehicles, is their concern about range will they find charging stations? And this is what we need, isn't it?
Yeah, it is what we need. So,
and it brings people into town, as I say.
That's
Have lunch in Armidale while your vehicle's charging if you're going north or south.
So we currently have four being built, let's call it in the Dan Murphy's car park, and we have just, this might be on your list as well, in that last meeting in February, we've agreed to accept a proposal for a group to build. There'll be two stations, but they can charge. Each station can charge two cars at a time. So let's say another four charging stations in Cinders Lane behind the council car park.
And council has already added some electric vehicles to its fleet.
Yes, yeah.
So, and that one in Cinders Lane will be very convenient, perhaps, for council.
It probably would. It probably wouldn't be good form, though, if the council cars are seen charging there. So I suspect we'll have to put a charger in the actual car.
Or cover the signs. People overwhelmingly approved of the old courthouse walkway and courtyard plans that we discussed at our very last year. What comes next? Which option? When will work start? We know
it's all approved. We're waiting for a government grant, whether we're successful there. So council's agreed to put in $600,000 to that walkway development. There was a grant for application for $300,000, so we can enschmicken it. That's not a word either, but really make that look good. So I think we're waiting on that outcome of that grant, which we'll find out, you know, in the next few weeks. And if that's the case, then we can put it out to tender and crack on. So I think that'll be fairly quick. If that's not successful, the motion that was passed is that the staff come back to council and either say, here's a scaled-down model that'll fit $600,000, or do we tap the developer contribution reserve that is sitting there and tip that in ourselves. So it'll hinge a little bit on the grant, and then it'll hinge on which way councillors want to go, digging into the reserve to do the plans that everyone likes, or dumbing it down.
And I know that Faulkner Street runs down there, but that'll be a nice punctuation mark at one end when you start doing the East Mall.
That's true.
Improvements,
yeah.
Won't it?
Yes.
It'll bring people to one end of the East Mall perhaps more frequently than it has been the case in the past. Now, I don't know much about this. I'm going to depend on you. Can you talk us through the GARA battery energy storage system?
I can. So a BESS, battery energy storage systems, are large batteries. And the GARA one is the second one that we have negotiated a planning agreement with. And just to go back a step, the state government, when they put out their benefit sharing framework, said, look, if it's storage, they shouldn't pay a benefit to the community. And Armidale Regional Council, well, no, that's not right. So we set the rate at the same that we've set solar, which is $850 per megawatt per annum. And we got the first one through at that rate, which is the Eathorpe battery energy storage system, which I think is a 200 megawatt one. And
we talked about that.
The state government's recently come and said, look, it should be maybe 150 is a good guide. And we've said, no, 850. If you're coming here, it's $850 per megawatt. We need to have some sort of wider benefit for the community. So the GARA one is the second battery that's been signed off at 850. Bit of negotiation, but we landed where we landed.
You got there, right?
We got there. Mm. And so that's a great thing. I suspect we will see more of these batteries attached to projects. So to pimp up wind and solar, they'll have a big battery sitting there as well. These two are standalone, and so they're around the substation out on the Grafton Road. There's limited places you can actually put these batteries, but the idea is that they'll store the excess energy from the solar and
when the wind isn't blowing and the sun isn't shining. So the agreement with Alinta Energy's Oven Mountain Initiative, still going in this area, is that holding up work that's starting on that, I guess, fairly critical Kempsey-Armidale Road upgrade?
No, it's a them problem, not an us problem. We've already got the agreement.
Not dependent on them for starting the work in any sense at all?
No.
Or any agreement? Is that nailed down now?
Yeah.
All right. Oh, that's good news.
Yeah, so they need to crack on. I suspect and I'm not sure what the flooding's like down there as we speak, but, the heavy rain causes landslips, so that road's been
problematic for a long time.
It has been problematic for a long time. It's sort of an impressive engineering feat for what was done 100-plus years ago, in the side of a very steep mountain that doesn't see sunlight. So that hence the slippage, whereas if you then go across the river, it's relatively flat.
Don't get drying.
It's part of the issue
in that area, isn't it?
It's going to be interesting times.
No, I was just curious if the Alinta Energy project was in any way holding us back. So let's finish with another good one, interesting one. The new outfits, the new clothing for
trademark.
Yes, indeed.
I think that's a good thing. It continues the cultural journey that the council's been on. Wellness is a very real thing, and I know some people out there might just say, oh, it's all this touchy-feely nonsense, but there is no doubt that the culture at council has changed. People are very proud to work there. And to take that a step further is to actually be interested in those that, you spend a lot of time with. So it's, trademark hats off to them. It's about starting a conversation, and men in particular asking, are you okay?
Mm-hmm.
You seem a bit long in the lip. What can we do? So, that's quirky and cool.
So if you see somebody, a council worker in the new garb,
Have a chat
and ask him about it, just as we've done today. And thank you very much for our usual chat.
Thanks, Paul. Great, been great.
Not so much this time, but sometimes we get into the meat of it in a few months.
It was only good news this month. Oh, actually, except for the closure of the airport. that was bad news. That was bad news. What else? There was a bit. Actually, the other thing I thought you might have asked me about just is this spate of crime. It's not me, by the way. So that's something that has really stood out, and I probably. So that's something that's real. Everyone has heard about, and it's taken off, and there's no doubt it's been a big issue. So in that sort of 5-week period from Christmas through till early February, there was a break and enter and a car being stolen pretty much every night. Mm. And that sort of a spike is just sort of unheard of here. And so there was a lot of... there's been a lot of interaction between different agencies, and I've spent a lot of time speaking with the police, community advocates, victims of crime and the like. And the police are operating within a legislative environment. They can't do any more, and I'm really satisfied that the police are doing all they can. It was led by people from out of town coming up here fairly regularly and leading some of our youngsters astray. So some of those main perpetrators, you know, have got a bit of time to cool their heels now.
I'll tell you why I didn't go there, and I did consider it. The reason I didn't bring it up this time is that, having read quite a bit about this at the time, you do see spikes. Statistically, you're better to look over longer periods of time, and when you do go to a lot of the statistics, you find, for example, that the rate of murders in Australia hasn't really changed very much. You can see little statistical blips, but if you look at the more sensibly over longer periods of time, and I don't mean sensibly in the sense that people aren't affected by this or their lives aren't changed by it or they don't see it in their own circle, but I was just going to the fact that we know that those rates tend to stay reasonably consistent. They also show which deterrents work and which don't, and I actually wanted to be, rather than be alarmist about it and shock jockery about it, I wanted to spend a bit more time thinking about it, and so that's really the reason I didn't go to it.
Probably one of the reasons why I did want to bring it up is I don't want to be hiding from anything, and I certainly don't want us to be seen as a crime area. So what you say is great. We do have these blips, but it returns for a number of reasons. Sorry, it goes back to normal for a number of reasons. But one of the positives that has come out of this is that we had a genuine Armidale solution for this, and that is Backtrack. And they went back on... It was actually some of their team leaders said to the leadership, we need to get back on night patrol. And they've been doing that probably for the last 3 weeks, driving around in the dark hours, and if they see a youngster somewhere that they shouldn't be at that time, they've invited them to have a bit of a chat and let's come back for a cup of coffee.
And being proactive is always much more useful than being responsive after the event, isn't
it? That's right. And so it's that sort of thing that I'm incredibly proud that our region has a resource that... is showing initiative and not sitting there pointing the finger. They're out there able to do something. Now, they are in a position to be able to do that. The gravitas and the reputation they have, etc., allows that to be effective. So there is a very real Armidale solution that I think has been gone some way to getting our, that sort of crime.
And I spent almost 10 years in the Northern Territory, and the night patrol concept is very established there.
Yeah.
And the... most communities have a night patrol, and it's designed to be a benefit to the community, but being proactive, it also is an intervention before young people do stupid things.
Yes.
Yeah. Put it that way. Right. Well, thanks very much, always. It's a pleasure to do this. We have some interesting topics to cover this time. There'll be more next month, I'll see you then.
Okay,
been talking with Sam Copeland, Mayor of Armidale, after the recent council meeting.